My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Wednesday, March 11th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Happy hump day, everyone. Happy wide open Wednesday on the Chief Sports Network. The morning show gets kicked off at 10. Jamie Bradford and company will bring you the aftermath of a eventful day yesterday in Gamecock land. More sludge falling from the sky, depending on your worldview. And your view of the Lamont Paris retention. And then last night, just a great nightcap, right? Softball loses another one to a good team. And then there's the matter of the baseball team taking got soundly whipped at Joe Riley Park in Charleston by a Citadel team that acted like they wanted to be there and played with passion and the way the game is supposed to be played, or all sports are supposed to be played in the college level. You're not going to be up every single time. It's a 56-game season, but seems like when you've lost to Queens and you've lost to Northern Kentucky and you've lost to Army, that perhaps you'd get up your last game before SEC play starts and have some positive mojo. But didn't happen. Citadel wins 8-3. It was really not even that close. Gamecocks have four errors, issued lots of walks. They did not get very many walks themselves. It was back to the old swing approach, I guess. Well, talk to JB about that, though, and see. They were back-to-back hit by pitches and then did nothing with it. And they lost. They got beat. They got their butts kicked by the Citadel. And so that's happened from time to time through the years in baseball. But this team did not need that. I'm not trying to overvalue or overplay a loss. But everybody's just about sick of it. And a lot of Gamecock Nation yesterday was not pleased with the news about Lamont Paris. Some were. And I get that point, too. I just, as far as my opinion goes on the Paris situation, I'll give it here in a second. But, I think that, hey, baseball's playing tonight. They're 5-game winning streak. Things got better over the weekend. I feel bad for the Charleston area Gamecocks that spent their money and time to go out there and care when the team did not. And, that's just unfortunate, and that's on everybody in the organization. Loss like that every now and then in baseball happens. We've seen it around the SEC, but it's unacceptable to continuously do that because, even if they do have a pretty good SEC record, if you're a borderline team, bubble team, to get into the 64-team field, these losses can come back to haunt you. Now, Carolina's RPI is still pretty good. It probably won't affect them, but you never know. This is how things go around here. Things come back to bite you. Spent a lot of time talking about basketball, how many non-conference losses hurt Frank Martin to get back to the tournament. But, it's a longer season. Baseball is a little different. The SEC is really good. You win your share of games, you should be in. But it was just, here we go again. I don't know. And I don't want to sit there and get into this whole every time they lose a game, you know, you're back to firing the coach or whatever. I think since last year, I've been pretty clear that I don't know that this is any kind of answer for the program. I'll say that if they get in a regional. Now, that's overall and big picture, not necessarily, hey, you get to a regional, you want to keep it going, get some good recruits. That's fine. They're not recruiting well at all. This program isn't, and it was by design. They didn't go after many high school guys, but, you know, you look at the state of South Carolina, they're not getting hardly any players from in-state. One player they are getting from in-state, and one player that does play his butt off every single time and does do the right thing and is a really good player is Will Craddock. Two home runs last night. A guy wasn't even – it's kind of like Ethan Petrie. Wasn't even in the lineup the first game, but even kind of looks like Ethan a little bit. But certainly a player to be excited about right now. And there's other guys doing well. Some guys had off nights at the plate, but it seems to me like there's a direct correlation between walks and hit by pitches and getting on base and scoring enough runs to win with this team this year. And there probably is in all of baseball. I mentioned Moneyball many times. He gets on base. So that's maybe that's tried and true, right? The Moneyball philosophy. Told you about softball going down to Duke. It gives me a sick feeling they keep losing all these games to good teams. Because we all are a fan of softball and Ashley Chastain Woodard and that program, obviously. She's comes on our shows a lot and is a Gamecock and elevated that program last year. But, you know, they gotta get hot here in a little bit. That was the key to last season, too. They got hot early and, you know, went down to Baton Rouge, went up to Durham and swept a series. But it's just been tough going for that team this year as far as getting over the hump to win. And we've had a lot of seasons like that around here in sports lately, too, right? Close losses. That's a thing. It's just everything's going, man. Gamecock men's basketball tonight, the nightcap, 9:30-ish Eastern time. Oklahoma Sooners in the SEC tournament, and that leads me into the Lamont Paris thing. You know, I look, hope they win. Would love to have another game for Meechie Johnson in the uniform. I think now that it's public, Lamont Paris is coming back. You're kind of back to, hey, have as much success as you can, get some momentum heading into the offseason. Not that one win in the SEC tournament is going to do it, but Carolina hasn't won a whole lot up there, even when they've had good teams. So winning in Nashville, it's the tournament's in Nashville every year, so you've got to find a way to win in it, right? And even when it hasn't been in Nashville, occasionally Tampa or St. Louis, they've lost there too. So you got to find a way, or hopefully you find a way to have a second victory over the Sooners, and that would give you a second win over a good team. I don't know that they're going to the NCAA tournament. I think they're on the bubble, so they're going to be motivated. And they missed a lot of shots and looked a little outside of three players, looked a little disinterested when they played at the Colonial Life Arena when they lost. So that was way back in January. They're a different team now. So we'll see what happens with the Gamecocks. They will not lose 20 games this year. That's, I guess, little victories, right? And Lamont Paris is coming back. Now, so – that the news got out, Lamont, I talked to John Whittle yesterday from the Big Spur, good friend of mine. He's on his way to Nashville and was telling me that there's media availability with Lamont. And the things Lamont Paris said, you know, when you look at the statements by Jeremiah Donati and Lamont Paris, the one thing I owe to you guys is the old saying, don't pee from the roof and tell me it's raining. Is that the saying? I don't know what you would expect either one of them to say that's profound. But, you know, there were some things in there. And I'll start with Donati's statement because it came out earlier. So I'll start with a statement. So he said, Gamecock Nation deserves a winning men's basketball program. It deserves, agreed. I understand the frustration and disappointment following the results of the past two seasons. Coach Paris can win here, and he has proven it. He led this team to the NCAA tournament appearance in just his second season and was the SEC Coach of the Year after tying a single-season program record with 26 wins. He has proven he can win throughout his coaching career. Well, okay, so the problem with men's basketball at the University of South Carolina has definitely, in big picture, not the last 2 years. It's been consistency, and I don't want to say consistency, sustainability, right? And I'll say this again, every coach that's coached here since Steve Newton has had at least one winning good year. Darren Horn did not go to an NCAA tournament, but, you know, that team, his first team was 21-10. They were a very lightly scheduled team in the non-conference, and some of the good teams they played in the non-conference were, well, let's just say they weren't, they ended up not being good. It was kind of like, almost like that team Frank Martin had that went 24-8 that got snubbed. I think that was a bigger snubbing. I don't know that the first Horn team, which was good. I mean, Zam Frederick, Mike Holmes, Devin Downey, I actually was in Columbia and went to every game that year. And, you know, it was exciting. I mean, it was an exciting season. So the Gamecocks, they played, they lost to the College of Charleston in overtime. In the non-conference, they did lose to Clemson. They beat Baylor on the road, but then there were some losses mixed in that just cost them the RPI or whatever. And then when they lost their first round game down in Tampa to Mississippi State in the NCAA tournament, it got them. And then Steph Curry and Davidson came in for the NIT. The NIT was still a pretty decent thing back then. And that was tough. I think they also lost to Vanderbilt late in the year. That was a bad loss. But they got beat by 16 at home against a good Tennessee team. So, you know, anyway, we can go back and do the history there. So even that disaster of a coaching tenure, it got worse from there, but he had a pretty good year. You know, they were not a bad basketball team. The arena was full. I remember they tried to, they're like, this is one of those things where they sold cheap tickets to sell it out. Played Georgia at home on a Saturday night, and we beat them by 11. The place was rocking. So even Darren Horn had a good year. Frank Martin obviously had several pretty good years. Won, of course, NCAA tournament and Final Four. Obviously a big year. Dave Odom, NCAA tournament. Eddie Fogler, two NCAA tournaments. I mean, there haven't really been that many coaches, to be honest, during the SEC era. It's not like they've changed coaches every 3 years. So I don't know relative to where you're trying to take the program that 23, 24 is relevant. It's relevant in the sense it was historic and a good year, but coaching decisions are big picture decisions. And the big picture has a whole heck of a lot more to do with now in college athletics than maybe it does with regards to what's happened here, right? You know, I don't know that you base a lot on everything on history. I think you got to factor it in because we're in a different era. So if we're in a different era, then I don't even know that the fact that Coach Paris can win here is applicable. He wanted right on the cusp of a changeover to a new era, and since the new era's kicked in, he just hadn't had it, and that's been a problem. But also, I mean, I like Lamont Paris. I'm not coming down on him. Facts are facts. He has not proven he can win throughout his coaching career. If you look at Chattanooga, it took 5 years to build that, to get that team going. Now, COVID, yeah, but I think we're kind of beyond the point in college athletics where we're still giving free passes for COVID. You know, not that you shouldn't look back and go, oh, yeah, that was a bad year. It really wasn't a good year. Because of COVID, it was challenging for everybody. You can just kind of throw it out. It just shouldn't, you know, you can't keep worrying about it, right? And you know, had he lost 20 games this year again, it would have been his fifth loss as a fifth 20 loss season as a division head coach in 9 seasons. Goes on to say, our goal is to build a men's basketball program at South Carolina that's consistently competitive in the SEC and nationally. All right, you can pick that apart. What does define competitive? I think if you're quote-unquote competitive in the SEC, you could make the NCAA tournament. So, which would make you competitive nationally. Now, those are all the parts that I'm like, if I'm sitting out there where you guys are at, I'm like, oh, well, you know, that's not very reassuring. maybe for you it is, and that's fine. You know, this is not, I'm not coming down on Donati or the statement. It's a, you know, most athletic directors in the country will put out statements similar to this. It's just when you go and, you know, that's why I always said, and look, I understand that, you know, it was probably time, kind of looking at how some of the hires have turned out and things like that, and just knowing that Ray Tanner probably was not as fired up about this era of college athletics as, and for any coach, it's probably going to be that way. You know, but nobody wanted to retain Chance Miller either, who by all measures is a mover and shaker down at Coastal, and a very innovative individual that was right here on staff, you know, and that's fine too. You know, I get it. You don't, if you look at it through the prism of sports, if you feel strongly a change needs to be made, you don't promote the top assistant, right? And that's fine too. I'm not coming down on anybody's opinion on it. And I think Jeremiah Donati has actually done some very good things behind the scenes, mainly as it relates to getting Shane Beamer and the football program what it needs to upgrade. And I think, you know, firing or no firing, he does do that, you know, behind the scenes, you know, funding and making sure NIL is in place and stuff. And that's good. That's a good thing. So I'm not coming down on him. I'm just saying, if you read this statement, I'm putting myself in your shoes for a bit. But this is the good part. To reach our goals, it will require an increased level of investment across the program that matches these expectations. We are committed to making these critical investments. Additionally, it requires an ongoing assessment and evaluation to ensure we are moving forward and making the necessary improvements. Alongside these investments, it is my expectation that we will see significant improvements in the short term. All right, that means next. That's basically a long way of saying win next year, and I'm going to be evaluating every aspect of the program for the entire season. So no pressure, Lamont. No pressure for next year. So that's good. I wish this would have been kind of at the beginning and not some defense of, I guess, defense of a tenure that really you can't just sit there and say it's been good. I mean, it's literally the losingest period in the SEC era this program has had. So, you know, let's, I mean, I don't know that the athletic director needs to say that in a statement, but let's just be honest. I mean, you know, we can't hold on to the 26 wins forever and the coach of the year. I want to assure our fans and constituents, for those of you wondering what constituents are within a university, I think it's like, everybody kind of involved, like students, alumni, people that work there, other, you know, coaches, players, that I kind of had to look that up because, like, that's a political term. But within a university, it's, you know, fans would be kind of the outside people that support, and the constituents would be inside. Sometimes it's from the outside, but I want to assure our fans and constituents, he said, that we will put in the work to make this a program you are proud of year in and year out. It is a rapidly changing college athletics landscape, but we welcome that challenge and opportunity. Okay. So he and Lamont Paris both talked about, because Lamont's interview was actually a little bit more detailed. And there was no interview with Donati. It was just a statement. My thing is this: Jeremiah Donati's been here a year. Lamont Paris, this is going to be his fifth year. If you look around at the rest of the SEC in men's basketball, I don't think you can blame the rapidly changing environment because, yes, there's programs that invested long ago in men's basketball, like Auburn with Bruce Pearl, and our football's been down, and it's kind of what they've got. It's basketball, and it's got to be a disappointing year with Stephen Pearl for them. But Auburn's invested, Tennessee's invested. All these other schools have invested long before NIL. If you look at the coaches, and what happened was when the SEC got rich, and they weren't very good in basketball, and Greg Sankey was like, "You guys need to invest in basketball." Remember all that? I think they got like two teams. It was the year Carolina got snubbed. They only got three teams in the tournament. A 24-win South Carolina team got left out because the league wasn't that strong. And that's when things started to change. You started seeing really good coaches come into the league and schools beef up the investment. And South Carolina, invested somewhat. I'm not going to say as much as their peers, but they had Frank Martin. They went to Final Four. They had a bite at the apple, right? But so the investment's been going on for a while. But if you look and see how NIL and the portal has turbocharged that on almost all of the campuses except South Carolina and LSU, LSU spent the 10 million and they weren't any better. Of course, they had some injuries. But LSU basketball goes up and down on the men's side. But if you look at all the other campuses, Vanderbilt. They've made the investment and hired a coach that can navigate this era, right? That has proven he could navigate this era. He won 31 games at James Madison. Georgia, everybody kind of snickered when they hired Mike White. Well, Mike White's a heck of a basketball coach. Some guys, kind of like Tubby Smith at Kentucky, the expectations are kind of out of whack, and I don't blame Florida. And Florida obviously made a great move because they won a national title, and all that. But Georgia's elevated, and these are peer programs. Vandy and Georgia and South Carolina basketball aren't too dissimilar. South Carolina since 2010 has made two NCAA tournaments, Vandy three, Georgia three. Now those will be four coming up, so they've doubled them, but they've passed the Gamecocks. It used to be Vanderbilt, Georgia. They're kind of on the same even playing field. You look at Missouri, 0-19 in this 23-24 season for the Gamecocks. They didn't win a single SEC game. But Dennis Gates, who they've invested in 3 out of 4 years in the tournament, they're a bubble team this year. A&M lost their coach and went and hired the guy from Samford and spent and got, and before that, they invested in Buzz Williams. And before that, Mark Turgeon. I can't say South Carolina hasn't done that, but at the same time, if we are in a new the time to have talked about a new era of college sports and come up with a plan would be proactive after last season, and maybe they thought they were being, but around here sometimes things are not very proactive. Now the good news is, like with NIL for football, Carolina catches up pretty quick and ends up doing it the right way in this new era. But it's still, you're like, okay, well, the new era has been here for a while, and your peer schools that you've routinely beaten on the basketball court have passed you, and so now you're having to catch back up, and I don't know, it's just a bad look, I think, for right now. Not that things can't change, as we've all seen throughout college athletics. Now, Lamont Paris stressed this, and he's right. It's not just NIL. Now, he kind of took the approach that he's recruited some guys that don't really have a lot of passion. And certainly, I can't say that they played with a lot of passion at times this year, hardly at all. I've seen this, and we want to talk about the new era. You're going to get this sometimes with guys that you don't really expect it for, and it's the money. In basketball in particular, some nights it's just, we'll just go out and do it. And I think, a lot of that's on the coach to get them to do what they need to do. I do think as far as playing time and minutes this year, because that's a basketball coach's best weapon. Paris tried just about everything he could. That's why all those freshmen were playing, because they got out there and tried, which is, you know, that's a basketball is a very fun game to play. It's hard, but it's a fun game to play. That's why football players play it. Don't need to bring that up. Everybody plays it. Mike Morgan still plays it. And so, you know, with that, I don't understand. I mean, you got to play for the love of the game, but maybe I'm just a Gen Xer, and Michael Jordan to me is the GOAT, and there's nobody more competitive. And Michael Jordan's Michael Jordan. He's rare. You don't get that all the time. But he also said that and hinted very strongly that, you know, he mentioned the title GM. You know, maybe you don't need to call them the general manager. That term is kind of, I think, to get people more money and make personnel guys feel good. There's very few like that operate like pro GMs, nor should they. The coach still needs to run the program in college at the college level for a number of reasons. But I do think in the scouting department, and he made the same point I did yesterday, man, maybe you need help on the identification process. They need help. Somebody needs to help them find players. You got Kerry Rich on staff. He's one of the best relationship guys out there. But Kerry can't sit there while he's trying to deal with relationships and all that good stuff and sit there and scout 300 teams in the portal and all that good stuff. And it's a portal game in basketball now. It's, you know, very, very few freshmen outside of great ones move the needle. You don't have time to develop them. They get in the portal. Yeah, man. So we'll see on that. But Lamont did admit that, you know, the roster construction and stuff. But he also said, oh, it's changed. It's different than when I was at Wisconsin, where they had recruiting challenges and he overcame them. And he said he prided himself in evaluating talent and finding players. I think so. So what's the problem then, JC, if he's good at evaluating talent and finding players? Well, the way to find players has changed. He didn't have a lot of help, you know, just because of a manpower situation. I mean, football even needs – I mean, Shane hired a guy, and they've done a fantastic job finding players out of the portal, I think, for the most part. Basketball, you know, like I said yesterday, Frank Martin, Dave Odom, in the AAU era where recruiting got a lot tougher to the University of South Carolina because you couldn't, you know, Eddie Fogler, George Felton, they just went and buddied up the high school coaching community. And it's like football used to be, you know, the coach send them your way, you know, but when you're dealing with AAU coaches, that's a little bit different and things like that and shoe companies and all that happiness. So that said, in that era, you got to say Dave Odom and Frank Martin were the two most successful coaches, and they both could find players, you know. And we thought Lamont Paris could with that one big year, but he hadn't been able to since. So the manpower is going to be encouraging. You know, we'll just see. The portal opens April 7th, so we've got a month. We'll see what they put in place. We'll see if there's any assistant coaching staff changes. And what other infrastructure comes with it. But I'll say this big picture, you know, even though I understand, and I was leaning and I'm still lean toward how much losing is too much losing, you know, not just at South Carolina, but before you say, well, this isn't the answer. And obviously Donati, you know, be it a financial decision or whatever, and I wouldn't buy if the buyout was prohibitive for making a change, then what's South Carolina doing in the SEC? You know, I just don't, and it is expensive. It's a big price tag to pay. And you also, unfortunately, you know, and I pray to God this doesn't happen because probably got every single one of us deserve a better football season next year, a much better football season. But what if you're forced to make a change there? That's a $30 million buyout, $27 million, I think, maybe higher. So maybe you're looking down, maybe you're looking down the road at baseball and you're like, well, gosh, if we could save a $35 million investment for a rainy day with other sports, you know, maybe we should just go that direction yet again this year. And so I guess that's a way to look at it. I don't know that the buyout should have been the sole. Oh, we can't afford the buyout. Maybe it's you can't afford the buyout and afford some other things that may be necessary in the future, which is smart. It's not one, not something that I think necessarily I would agree with, but that's smart. So anyway, so maybe that's it. But just saying that didn't have the money for the buyout. I'm not buying that. And I'm also not buying that it was all about NIL money. And Lamont Paris said that. He said it wasn't just financial. He said, but certainly when you have the resources to go get guys, it helps. And here's the thing. There are players out there that I do think, you know, Carolina just probably couldn't even get in the game with because they were expensive. And, you know, South Carolina, under Lamont Paris, they do need certain types of players. He likes certain types of players. And you kind of, I'll give you the big man that can shoot example. Those guys, they're called NBA players. They're rare. And we all know from football is the more rare you are, the higher the tag. So, you know, I thought the public statements were good. I take exception to some things that were said, but Lamont's coming back. They play tonight. We'll see how they can yet again restructure it. I will say, big picture wise, no matter who's coaching the team, University of South Carolina men's basketball does need some love, tender love and care. And, you know, I guess now they're going to start to evaluate it closely, but it does need a lot of work, more so than any other program on the campus. I would say. And it's important. It's a revenue sport. You make money. They made, I think they're 3.5 million in the black last year, as bad as last year's season was for men's basketball. And there's money to be made with NCAA tournament money and ticket sales and all that stuff. It's some low-hanging fruit for from a revenue standpoint. All right, football. And gosh, I've gone over. Shoot. All right, so quickly, the schedule next year. I hear a lot of people talk about the schedule, and the schedule's everything in the SEC these days because it's a randomized rotating schedule. It's now 9 games long. You know, you can really help yourself in a lot of ways, record-wise, if you can get a fortunate draw. You can also screw yourself if you don't, or not get screwed if you don't. I don't think that South Carolina had the best draw, last year, obviously. But a lot of folks say, some say, there's a light at the end of the tunnel because this year's schedule is more of an SEC East style schedule. No Missouri, no Vandy, but you got the rest of your former division opponents. So I'm going to go through it and look and just say, all right, so who's replacing who? It's a little cattywampus because, you know, you've got 9 conference games now. So basically, Virginia Tech is replaced by Mississippi State. Now, based on last year, shoot, I'd have loved to have played Mississippi State last year, but, you know, they're probably better than Virginia Tech was last year. Now, this year, I'll take Mississippi State. Now, don't take these guys lightly. I was watching some of their quarterback, Kamario Taylor. They got more transfer, more new players in, so you just don't know. It's the SEC opener. Jeff Lebby needs to win. They did manage to get to a bowl last season at 5-7. They lost to Wake Forest, but they brought back their former head coach. So did Virginia Tech, for that matter. Weird. Zach Arnett to coordinate the defense under Jeff Lebby. So I expect them to be improved on that side of the ball because they haven't been very good on that side. But given that James Franklin is James Franklin and he brought a chunk of his players from Penn State, and that roster's so much better. And you know, I'd probably take Mississippi State. So that's you know, and look, all this could change, right? I'm just right now, February 11th, is the schedule truly, even with nine SEC games, an easier path? And that Mississippi State Virginia Tech comparison, or if you're playing North Carolina, yeah, I wouldn't mind playing North Carolina right now, or NC State, you know, anybody like that. Like my chances with Mississippi State, they have not won at South Carolina since 1998. It's almost been 30 years. That game is at home. So any kind of luck, so Tennessee comes on the schedule. They come to Columbia. Have them down as kind of replacing Missouri. I think everybody would agree, Tennessee in Columbia through the years recently has been a different animal, the Tennessee in Knoxville. And so I'll take Tennessee on that because Missouri, it hadn't really mattered where the game's been. They've either let one slip away, like in 2024, or they've won. So it'll be good to not have Eli Drinkwitz on the schedule for a change. So I'll take that. Tennessee, you know, who's going to be the quarterback? George McIntyre looks like the guy up there. I think they've got some talent, obviously, at receiver. They got some a lot of portal guys on defense, and Jim Knowles is their new D coordinator. Some were saying the other day it takes Knowles about a year or two to get his system in place. So, you know, how much better will they be? That's in Columbia, and we saw what happened in 2022. Gamecocks should have beaten them in 2020. They did in 2018. They did in 2016. They should have beaten them in 2014, had them beat. Beat them in 2012, beat them in 2010, beat them in 2008. Williams-Brice Stadium has turned into a house of horrors for the Vols. And that game is at home right in the middle of October. So I'll take Tennessee, right? Arkansas or Ole Miss? Now, going out to Arkansas in November is tricky because it gets cold. Ryan Silverfield, you know, expectations are not high for the Razorbacks this year. Ryan Silverfield comes from Memphis. I've always liked him. Always thought he was a good coach. You know, was it the type of hire everybody's fired up about? No, but it could be sneaky good. Could be sneaky good. And, you know, you talk to Arkansas people, they're fired up, and he's started to get some recruits and stuff. I think they probably will be, depending on their portal hits, a year away. I certainly would rather play them than Ole Miss, though, because Ole Miss has Chambliss back. They got a lot of good players out of the portal. They've been a pain for everybody. They're a playoff team. I think you want the team with the first-year head coach. In November, when even though it's out there, you know, they may have already figured out they're not very good. And, you know, that's a you know, still could be the elements a little bit because it does get colder out there. Will Muschamp told me one time because Florida was – the Gators were going out to play Arkansas late. And he said, well, that's – going out there that late, you know, those Florida guys, it's going to be – tough for them to survive the elements. And it was in the 40s or something. I think it's raining. Arkansas just beat the snot out of them by 3 touchdowns. So Coach Muschamp knows ball. And then Florida or Vanderbilt. It sounds a little weird, but Vandy's obviously been better the last couple of years. I would say this because, again, this is the next. So there's three that are on the plus side. Going to the Swamp stinks. Again, House of Horrors. Carolina's only won down there twice. I think Vandy, you know, even if Jared Curtis is a good freshman quarterback, you know, they were so reliant on Pavia and that system. You know, how's the system going to operate this year? They lost a lot of seniors. I think Vandy will take a step back, quite frankly. So this is a year I'd probably be rather playing Vandy. So that's three on the plus side. One on the minus with replacement teams. So, okay. And let's go five on the plus side because I believe, you know, just a kind of a silly comparison when you compare Towson to SC State, I'd rather play Towson. Those kids aren't going to be as up for that game as SC State. Path of least resistance, as Mike Morgan likes to say. And even though Kent surprised some people last year, I'd rather play them than Coastal. And Carolina's owned Coastal pretty much. But, still rather play Kent than Coastal because, again, the in-state factor. I like playing in-state schools in football. Stakes get a little higher. But so there's five on the plus side, one on the minus if you do the comparisons. Now, is Kentucky going to be better? I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it because you've got Will Stein coming in there and everybody's excited and they think, oh, we're finally going to score points. Like Kenny Minchie, the quarterback from Notre Dame, they got is CJ Baxter, the running back from Texas, they got going to be able to return to form. There's a lot of questions. They got some good offensive linemen, like Hurd from Tennessee out of the portal. I don't know if the big blue wall is coming back. The reason I don't think I'm not buying Kentucky is this is a fundamental shift from what they were doing in under Stoops. Under Stoops, solid bend but don't break defense, run the ball, grind it out, win games. Will Stein, different philosophy. Jay Bateman is their D coordinator. There's been times he has struggled. It definitely will not be the same style of defense that Mark Stoops and Brad White like to run. Brad White's at Florida now, by the way. So I'm going to go Kentucky on the plus side. At Clemson, I'll tell you one thing I like about Clemson. They got some speed at running back, Gideon Davidson, and then Chris Thompson. The running back from SMU, those guys are really fast. Chad Morris comes back. See what happens there. Vizzini is the quarterback. You don't know what Clemson can go the whole season, get to November, look like $1 million and beat Carolina. And then go to the bowl and lose, as we saw last year. But I still think Clemson's, that they have a lot of personnel losses. I think they'll replace them admirably. I don't think Clemson will be back next year to where they have been. So, and I think Carolina has more back. So I'm going to go with the plus side there too. At Alabama, is next year's Alabama team going to be trickier than the Alabama team this past year and the last 2 years where Carolina's almost beaten them? I right now I'd have to go plus. I don't know if it's going to be Austin Mack or Keelon Russell. Keelon Russell's difficult. It's in Tuscaloosa, but Dave Bartu came on with Jamie and Mad Dog, and it was going through the schedule and said, chalk it up as a loss. Rob Williams says a lot. Don't everybody's disrespecting Bama. I think they got good players. Everybody in the SEC does. It's not overwhelming anymore. And kind of like the 2021 Florida game, Carolina had played its butt off against Florida and really had two games they should have won. And then the third was during the pandemic, Dan Mullen's best team there. And they're firing at the end zone at the end to make it a one score game. And then they beat them in 2021, 40-17. So, in my opinion, this feels like a due game. I like it. I like Alabama being on the schedule. I don't like Oklahoma being on the schedule. That's a minus. I think they're going to material be healthy. I think their defense is going to keep right on rolling. Expectations are high after making the playoff last year. That's the thing about them is their defense and it's out there and they have a competent offense, unlike a couple of years ago. Not that Carolina can't go out there and win. Not that Kendall Briles hasn't coached there and done well, 45 points last time. But that's just one I can't say, all things being equal, and that going out there in 2026 is a little bit better than, matchup component-wise than this past year. So that's a 3-1. A&M going to go with the plus. They lost their D coordinator, but I don't think they're going to change much on defense because of Elko. But they lost their offensive coordinator, Kansas State, Colin Klein. The Gamecocks, really, if you dig in under Beamer, they've really kind of solved the A&M thing. I mean, he is 2-2, but got the first, well, it's 2-3. I'm sorry. I forgot. Forgettable first game, right? The last 4 years, he's solved it because in 22, they won. They snapped the losing streak. They went out there in 23 with shorthanded. If it hadn't been for defensive busts in the second quarter, they could have won the game at College Station that year. They came back, big, huge signature win over top 10 A&M team by 24 in 2024. 24 and 24. And then last year, we know what happened. We don't need to relive it, but let's just say South Carolina matched up just fine against the Aggies. And I think that in Columbia this year, it should be no different. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 4-1 on the plus. Now, Georgia, who did Georgia replace on the schedule? Oh, Georgia replaced LSU. I'm sorry, I screwed this up. Georgia or LSU? I definitely think the dogs are going to be tougher. Now, you're talking about Lane Kiffin's LSU, or how good are they going to be? I still think Georgia's going to be better. And if it was Georgia last year and LSU last year, it's probably a toss-up because Georgia was young. But I think this year, it's good that you don't have to worry about them until down the road. Hopefully the game has some significance, maybe not. So that's going to also be it's a 3-1, that's a 3-2 on the replacement, or 5-2 on the replacement games. And then you have a 4-1 on the other. So 9, better shot, better matchup right now, Wednesday, the 11th of March. 3, not as welcoming in the 12-game schedule. So there is some truth to be said, to be told, about how it looks now. Maybe it doesn't look that way as we move forward. A lot of new coaches, a lot of new players. It's going to be this way every year. Thanks for listening, folks. Wide Open Wednesday again on the Chief Sports Network. That means you don't have to be a Club Chief member, which you can join right here on the YouTube channel to get in the McKellar Enterprises chat box. Also want to say shout out to Resto Pro of Columbia for being great sponsors. Also Palm Casual Furniture. Those people I don't always mention. I always talk about D's Wings and Gamecock Traditions, but we all love them too. Don't forget InsideTheGamecocks.com for our newsletter, which will be out mid-morning today. Lots of stuff in there today. And the forthcoming website, InsideTheGamecocks.com, will launch here in the coming months. I know everybody's like, when? Patience, grasshopper. It will happen. A lot of these things have contracts and negotiations and different personnel, and it's like a long coaching search, right? Like it's like the Muschamp coaching search, right? It's kind of nothing, 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 and then boom, and here we go. Anyway, appreciate all you guys listening yet again. It's been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.